You're listening to Awake, a men's podcast by Fellowship Bible Church. Hello and welcome back to the Awake Men's Podcast. We are super excited to be back with you for a new year, 2025. And we have a special guest here with us today, Ryan Lefevre, broadcaster of the Kansas City Royals. Ryan, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
And a guest of the church.
Yeah, very much so. So those of you who are listening to this, if you're listening to it in February when this is coming out, today, as we're recording this, Ryan just spoke at our men's breakfast. And so we got to hear some of your story, get to hear some of your experience in working with the Royals. And honestly, I was just super encouraged to see not only the number of guys that came, but also just to hear the ways that God has worked in your life and be able to share that with the brothers in our church. So super grateful for you doing that.
Well, I probably spent most of my career, especially the younger half of my career, so focused on myself and wanting the next promotion, the bigger role, wanting to make more money, wanting to have a higher profile. I would go to these stadiums, and before the game started, most teams would have this highlight video montage of great moments in team history. And there'd be these iconic calls, and sometimes I could look to my left and be like, wow, that's his call. Like, mm-hmm. He gets to hear that before every game. How cool is that? Mm-hmm. Well, the first 15 years or so as a Royals broadcaster, there were no iconic moments. I mean, and I was really envious, and it was a lot about me. And when we won the wild card game in 2014, I had radio responsibilities during the game. And I had to walk out when the game was over, out to right field for my television post-game responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And in order to get there, I had to walk through the crowd. And I walked through mostly unnoticed, and I got to watch the fans celebrate this iconic moment in Royals history.
Yeah.
And it really changed my perspective of, you know what, this is not about me at all. Look at these fans. I mean, it had been 29 years since mm-hmm. they'd been to the playoffs, mm-hmm. and they were beside themselves. And it really changed the course of my career that, you know, if the players go away, I go away. Mm. If I go away, they're just going to hire somebody else right. and the game's going to keep
another
playing.
Voice. Takes
yeah.
Space.
So, I mean, it was just all that. There was an iconic moment. I got to call the moment, but it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. The result was seeing how much it meant to the fans. And then just using my job. For speaking opportunities to mm-hmm. share my faith, I really began to realize that God didn't put me here to call baseball games.
Right.
That's my platform. Mm-hmm. But God put me here and allowed me to go through some things in my life so that I would have a story to tell like I did on January the 25th.
Yeah.
So that's how my career began, but how I see it and how I see it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just kind of, you talked about the wild card call, but I think some of our listeners would probably say there's a bigger call you've probably made that next year in 2015 when they won the World Series. So then making like a World Series call, you know, that saying that your team won the World Series, that's like just pinnacle of maybe a broadcasting thing. But then you're turning around and it's like your work is more than just that one call that you made. So yeah. I'm curious, you know, as you feel like you've hit the pinnacle with the World Series call, how do you feel like, you know, keeping that same type of excitement or just kind of momentum moving into the next season when the momentum started to slip away, but mm-hmm. you're still like, okay, I still need to, you know, keep this excitement here for the Royals. So how do you navigate something like that?
Well, I've had a lot of practice with 90 and 100 lost seasons, yeah. like I shared at the men's breakfast. You know, this goes back to when I first began in Minnesota. I was doing radio and TV for the Twins in my early 20s, and I had a mentor named John Gordon. And I don't remember where we were, but it was a long rain delay in a long game. And I want to say that we were somewhere on the East Coast, and it was like 1 a.m. because of the rain delay. And I made some dumb comment like a 25-year-old would make about like, who's listening to this game? I didn't say it on the air, but I said it maybe during commercial. And he looked at me and he says, I'll tell you who's listening to this game right now. Who's listening to this game right now is a truck driver who's trying to stay awake as he's driving through Minnesota right now. or somebody who has the graveyard shift. And usually when he gets to the graveyard shift, the game's over. But tonight, he gets to hear the game instead of just sitting in his booth out in the middle of nowhere with his overnight responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Who's listening tonight is someone who's driving home late from work after a long day of work, and they just don't want to think about their work for the next 20 minutes on the drive home. I mean, he made me feel about this big for good reasons. But I began to realize that during the losing seasons, that's when the true fans are listening.
Those are your faithful.
Those are the people who really care about the Royals. And even though we're losing 100 games, they care about the players. We can't lie to the fans, but we know that they want to hear more positive stuff than negative stuff. You know, they don't want us talking about how bad the game is and how bad the team is. I mean, they're going to turn their TV off. They want to see the moment where a young player got better. He had a breakthrough. He figured something out. Or someone might have a walk-off home run with a 7-run ninth inning, and the game in the big picture doesn't mean anything, but the guys are celebrating, and someone is at home saying, that was really cool.
Yep.
And if I pull back from that because I'm annoyed because it's just another game in a losing season, like, I'm not doing my job. So it's kind of a long answer to your short question, but just that, and I mean this sincerely, the easiest games to do are playoff and World Series games because every pitch matters, every play matters, every run matters. I mean, those are, there's a lot of people listening and they're high pressure games, but as a broadcaster, those are easy. The 12-1 game in the fourth inning in a 100 loss season. I mean, that's when we earn our money.
Tough. Yeah.
So how do you keep the people engaged? But just knowing that whoever's watching this game has made the choice to watch this game, and so I owe it to them to give them my best no matter what the score is.
So I have no idea if anybody else is going to be curious about this question or not, but I'm just going to ask it anyway. Did you always think, or were you told, you've got a voice that would go well on radio or on TV? Or did is that something that you developed over time and it's gotten better? Or like, how did that come about?
Yeah, I think the voice thing really is overrated. So my dad was the manager of the Seattle Mariners from 1989 to 1991. And one of their radio announcers was and is a guy named Rick Riz. He's still there. And so I was beginning my college career and I was going to go into broadcasting. And he had just has just a classic broadcaster voice. You know, if he walks in the room and talks, you're like, that guy does something with that voice. I know he does. And I asked him the same question. I was like, I don't know if I have the voice to do this. And he said, don't worry about your voice. He goes, that will develop. And he said, worry more about what you say, not how you say it. So if someone says, if someone says I do have a broadcaster's voice, there's two other things that people overlook. I talk a lot. I did my 4,000th Royals game last season. So I'm talking, I'm projecting, I'm trying to speak clearly.
For hours.
Yeah. And it's just an instrument. And so the instrument just becomes more refined. And so maybe I enunciate more, maybe I project more, maybe I use my diaphragm more. Who knows? But another part of having a good voice too, which I don't even know if it's a good voice, it's just a recognizable voice.
Sure.
You know,
so it becomes familiar.
If you do this podcast for 10 more years and someone runs into you in the grocery store and they hear you talk and they're like, oh, I love your voice. It's the familiarity of it is really what I think appeals to people. And then there's just ways to tell a story. You know, I mean, if I'm going to tell you that, you know, when Bobby Witt Jr. was 5, his grandfather took him in the backyard and tried to teach him a curveball. And he tried for an hour and couldn't throw it. So his grandfather said, well, you can't pitch. You're going to be a hitter, right? Or you can say, when Bobby Witt Jr. was 5 years old, his grandfather took him in the backyard and his grandfather wanted to make him a pitcher because he was a pitcher. And for an hour, he tried to teach him how to throw a curveball. And he tried and he tried and I'm just making the story. Tried and he tried and he tried. And it just did not work out. And his grandfather said, and thank God for him, you're not going to be a pitcher. You need to be a shortstop or whatever. And look at what we have. So there's a way to tell a story too, where you kind of go into a little bit of storyteller mode, which, you know, may add to it as well.
Cool.
Talking about your work, we were just talking before we started recording about how our work, we look at as a mission field, right? The opportunity that God places us in this role to have divine appointments, these conversations, just what somebody needs with however God needs us. How have you seen, is there a moment in time that you feel like you've seen God work in the clubhouse and like a great way with a relationship that you have with somebody else? Or what's kind of a moment or two that you feel like God's really, you know, pushed through a certain low point of the season?
The person who's probably impacted me more than anyone else since I came to Kansas City was Mike Sweeney. So I'm a little older than Mike, but I came to Kansas City as a 28-year-old. I was sober for 1 year, and I was coming to a new place, and I didn't know anybody. And I was replacing a legend, Fred White, whose career began right here in Topeka, WIBW. And Michael and I were both single. We both came from a Catholic background. We both desired to have a family someday. But I really, in that stage of my life, I would have considered myself a man of faith. But I needed someone to show me what that looked like. Mm-hmm. In my father's era as a manager, if you were a born-again Christian, that was secret code for you're not a tough guy, you're soft, you're going to lean on your faith, you know, that guy's not going to be able to battle out there when you want to win a game because he's more worried about reading his Bible. Mm-hmm. Now, those words may not have been uttered just like that, but it was almost assumed that that's what that meant. Mm. So that was what that was kind of modeled for me. And what I, to see him conduct himself the way that he did, to stay true to his faith through the ups and through the downs. Mm-hmm. And I changed the way I thought about a Christian man, especially a Major League Baseball Christian man, because it's not easy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that a Christian man has to say no to in that environment. That's easy to fall into the trap of women and going out at night. Now, this is before everyone had a right. camera or yeah. a recorder on their phone. Mm-hmm. And so they could go off and blow steam. And, you know, you got guys that are being unfaithful to their wives, and there was really no way for them to find. I mean, there's just, and I began to realize, like, for him in this position, and he was a leader on that team, and they were mostly bad teams. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of, I hate to use this word, but it just popped in my mind, but there was a lot of persecution of the team and mm-hmm. their so-called Christian leader, and they're not winning any games, that he just had to take on and fight through. And so they didn't win a lot in those years, but in the years afterwards, you would hear people talk about, you know, I really admired the way Mike Sweeney went through all of that. Mm-hmm. And so the way I see it play out in a clubhouse is, you know, if one of your best players is a Christian man and lives a Christian life, that helps. But if your strongest Christian in the clubhouse is not the best player, he still can have an impact. That's mm-hmm. that's the guy that people go to when things are not going well. Yep. If their marriage is not going well, or they just signed a big contract and they're doing terrible and they're getting booed, those are the people that seem to be the ones that either are available or other players need them to be available because they realize like there's something about this guy. And you may not realize it in the moment, but 5 or 10, 15 years later, you know, I was going through a tough time, but I got to go talk to Mike Sweeney, and he helped me get through mm-hmm. and made me who I am today.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's people in, like, your side of things outside of the players, but in your industry that people see you in that way and have probably come to you looking for that advice or counsel when there's been that because of the way that you have tried to walk out and live your faith and with integrity and with consistency and faithfulness. There have been moments like that.
Yeah, there have been. And it's a big responsibility.
It is.
And
yeah.
I welcome the responsibility. And I will tell you, you know, being candid, that my walk and my ability to break through that barrier of, can I ask you a question? You know, mm-hmm. where's God in all of this? Or I'm still growing in that way.
Yeah.
And our church years ago, and they still have this 4-week program called Growth Track. And it's basically for new believers and new people at the church to come in and see what their gifts are. There mm-hmm. might be gifts they're not even aware of. How can they serve the church? And I rated very high on hospitality and generosity. And mm-hmm. I rated very low in sharing the gospel. Mm-hmm. So I could have walked out of there and said, oh, well, my gift to the church is I can be generous and I yep. can be hospitable. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like the Spirit was saying, yeah, that's true. or we can work on the ones you're not very good at. So that is something, and I'll be 54 years old on February the 12th, that in my faith that I hope that I'm a good example. I hope that my behavior points to the gospel, and I'm still growing in trying to begin those conversations.
Yeah. But even just sitting down with you just a couple of times, but then getting to hear you at the breakfast, I think the way that you share the gospel is through story. Mm-hmm. And that is hospitality because you're inviting them into your life. Mm-hmm. And then you're talking about the ways that God has worked in your life. So, I mean, I don't want to discount what that growth track said, but I think it goes to show that God has used that opportunity to grow you in that area already.
And I appreciate you saying that. I really do. I will also say, though, what I did here on January the 25th is easy for me because it's just my story.
Sure.
And sometimes a room full of people, they can become like wallpaper.
Mm-hmm.
But someone I've been friends with for a long time, and they know where I stand and I know where they stand. Mm-hmm. And to risk that relationship to say, have you ever considered that you're worshiping the wrong idol? Have you ever considered that you're worshiping an idol and you haven't realized it? Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered that maybe there's something more powerful than you and that there's a purpose for you and you're fighting against that?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever considered that there's not just a God that created the universe, but he's a personal God who knows you by name? And, I've taken a deep dive into apologetics. I love apologetics. And most of it's because of my Catholic background. I had a lot of Protestants ask me, well, what about Mary? What about the saints? And I'm like, well, let me find out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to share with them, some of the misconceptions about the Catholic Church and whatever. And it caused me to just dive deeper all the way back to the beginning of like, well, what do you believe about God? And I've come to find out that people either believe there's no God at all. So then you have to account for, how did you get something out of nothing, but that's another discussion another time. There's some people that feel like there's a God that basically grabbed a handful of dice and just kind of went, rolled the dice and just
let sat fall back where they
and
may.
Just let it fall where they may and, let them do whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Some people believe that there's a God that created the universe with intent, but just kind of, he's an observer and he kind of checks in every now and then, but he's not really a personal God. Mm-hmm. And then of course there's our God who made the personal decision to create the universe and create Earth and create us as individuals and knows us by name. And so to just kind of trying to walk them down, like which one do you believe in?
Mm-hmm.
And so if I can get them to, do you believe that the creator of the universe who created heaven and earth and everything in it might know your name?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of see where that conversation goes. But that is an area where for me to get in front of a room of a bunch of men and tell my story, and it's an emotional story, and I there's parts that I struggle getting through it, but it's my story. I know how it starts. I know how it ends. I know what scriptures I want to read.
Yep.
But that risky
relationship,
but this thing's full of take the risk. Yeah. Do not be afraid. 100%. Do not fear.
Be strong and courageous.
Be strong and courageous. Yep. Just introduce them to me. I'll take it from there and all that stuff. That's an area of growth for me.
Nah, for sure.
So you had mentioned in the talk about maybe your small group or your Bible study group being your accountability partners and how that's really strengthened your relationship. For our listeners, do you, and just listen to you talk right there in regards to like your mentor asking you these questions, or how would somebody go about, who's listening that like is asking themselves those same questions or doesn't really know how to go about who to speak to, who to ask those questions to in a trustworthy situation? How does one even, because those questions are from somebody who's dove in onto that, right? But somebody who's just starting, like you said, that our alpha classes per se, how would you recommend somebody, goes into those first step questions with, how do I find an accountability, trustworthy partner who can help me grow?
So I go back to Mike Sweeney again, who shared with me one time, he said, Jesus had a 1, a 3, and a 12.
Yep.
And so you got to figure out who your 1 and your 3 and your 12 are. There's one person, and even though Jesus was the creator, or he was here at creation and he's the word of God, and He was there at the beginning. He still needed to go and be with his one every now and then. He needed time one-on-one with God, and nobody went with him. That was just his time. And then there were a few opportunities where he had his three, you know, the transfiguration and certain things that he included, Peter, James, and John. And John, they were closer than the other 12 were. Mm-hmm. And then there was the 12, the people that they're on mission with. But inside of that 12 are a one and a three. And so that made sense to me at the time because at that, I mean, I have a one, that's my wife. I have a three, two other guys, but I also have a seven or an eight. So yeah. I don't really have mm-hmm. a 12. Mm-hmm. So, but I think to begin that process, you have to go backwards. And so go to a men's gathering and just sit and listen. What are these guys talking about? Are they talking about things that are interesting to me or not interesting to me? Mm-hmm. And there might come a time where the conversation involves something that you want to share. And being vulnerable, being intimate with our thoughts is a scary proposition for a man mm-hmm. because what if people reject yep. What's really going on inside of here? And there's only so far you can go if you just keep this behind a vault at some point.
Yep.
So my recommendation would be, especially in a church like yours, where groups are available all the time, just go and listen. And I think just to be there and listen to other men open up and be vulnerable and realizing, hey, that they're going through the kind of stuff I'm going through. Mm-hmm. And then just over time, you know, that the 12 then might end up in like a three or a four. Mm-hmm. But there always has to be a one. Mm-hmm. And the one could start out being God in prayer, but I think there has to be a one that
knows you,
that knows you, but yep. you have to allow yourself to be known.
Yeah.
I mean, what does intimacy mean? Intimacy mm-hmm. means to be known.
Yeah.
Into me see.
Yeah. Actually into naked. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Open up those barn doors.
Yep.
And hopefully what I did here on January 25th is if I can stand in front of a group of men and open my barn doors and mm-hmm. they watch me on television. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not just being humble and modest when mm-hmm. I say this, but look, I got kids that talk back to me and I yell at them more than I should and I apologize to them and I can be rude to my wife and I can overreact when I feel like she's being – I mean, I'm aside from when that red light goes on, mm-hmm. like my life is as boring and normal and usual as every – there's nothing remarkable. I just happen to have this job that yep. is on television 162 times a mm-hmm. year. So yeah. if I did anything on January 25th, it would be, you know, well, if this guy who we watch on TV every night has fears and doubts and has had to go through some things, then maybe it's okay that I'm going through yep. these things. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that I really appreciated mm-hmm. about what you shared, because it's really easy to say, like, God should be all that we need or all that we want. But to hear it from you when you're coming from a place of, I had it. Mm-hmm. I had everything that I could have ever wanted. And those things weren't enough. They were shown to be mm-hmm. just like a vapor. Mm-hmm. I think that hits home in a different way, because whether we are able to maybe admit it or not, I think a lot of us and a lot of guys are kind of caught in the success ambition mindset. And some of that has some good roots of wanting to provide well for our families. And I think that's an honorable and good thing that we should do. But when it gets to a point of like, I want to have security, I want to have control, or I want to have wealth or prosperity, mm-hmm. I think that's where it can become dangerous for us. So that was something that I appreciated that you shared at the breakfast that I think resonates.
I went to a seminar when I was going through my depression, and it was fascinating because it begins with, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
I want $1 million. Okay. How are you going to get there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to work hard. And how will that make you feel? It'll make me feel successful. Okay. What do you need to do to be successful? Well, I need to be more disciplined and I need to be more focused. Mm-hmm. Probably need to listen more to mentors who know more than me. Okay. And if you did all of that, how would that make you feel? Well, it would make me feel committed. Okay. Well, what do you need to do to be committed? Well, I need to... And what happens is we start peeling back all these layers. And so it begins with, I want $1 million, mm-hmm. but it usually ends somewhere with, I just want to be secure.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be accepted. I just want to be loved. And so what happens is some people get that $1 million and it's not what they thought it was going to be.
Yep.
And what they really wanted was to be loved. And there's other ways to be loved, mm-hmm. and be secure and be content with life without $1 million or without mm-hmm. being the vice president of the company or without being the lead pastor or without whatever.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The title is just a title. But I mean, in my, you know, 54 years now, I've seen a lot of powerful people that are just miserable. Nobody wants to be around them. And then there are people who are five levels under the vice president who just show up every day and they're just in a good mood and they're content and they do really well and they make people happy. And it's like, so what, like, what's the difference between the two of them? And it's like, well, some people understand what drives them. And mm-hmm. some people think, if I get this, then that'll make me feel.
Yep.
And it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So where was that change for you then, you know, from what triggered the book at that point, right? You know, with the Shame of Me book. So at some point in your life, you're like, enough is enough. I need to start living towards something that's greater than what I'm living for.
Well, I wanted to be the youngest. I had these goals. So I was very goal-oriented. And I used to listen to the cassette tapes of Tony Robbins way back when. And it just fired me up. And I wrote notes. And he had a little booklet. And I took action on some things. So I was always inspired by goals. And as I shared in my story, I mean, the root of it was not healthy. It was it was about being recognized and loved through what I did and not who I was. But I had goals and I had some ambitious goals. I wanted to be the youngest broadcaster in the major leagues, you know, and I accomplished that. I was 24 years old in 1995. I wanted to make a certain amount of money before I was 27 years old. And I did that. I wanted to drive a certain car before I was 28 years old. And I did that. I wanted to live in a house on a lake before I was 30 years old. And 2 months before my 30th birthday, I bought a house on Lake Winnebago in Kansas City. And I never felt more emptier in mm-hmm. my life because I put all of my hope in this. And then I did it. And it felt pretty good for a while, but mm-hmm. it was unfulfilling. Well, then it must be this thing. Mm-hmm. And that felt fulfilling. Well, and it just kept going on and on to the point where at the age of 34, I was a radio and television announcer for a Major League Baseball team. I lived in a big house on a lake. I had a boat and a jet ski down at my dock. I had two nice cars in my garage. And I found myself in the fetal position in my closet one night, crying out for the comfort of my mother. Mm-hmm. And that's what all that got me. Mm-hmm. And so getting to a point that low and realizing, like, I have everything I've ever wanted. Mm-hmm. Why do I, the one thing that I still wanted, did want to get married someday and mm-hmm. have a family. But at that point, I realized, like, that was just another idol. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to bring this guy into a marriage and being a father. So I called my mom, and who had been through clinical depression twice, and she could just tell by the sound of my voice. And the Royals had a day off, mm-hmm. and she said, I need you to go talk to somebody today. And I'm going to call you back in 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and you need to tell me who you're going to go talk to today. And I don't know if you know anybody to talk to, but I know that you know somebody who knows somebody to talk to. So I got on the phone, I called my chiropractor.
Okay.
And I said, I'm going through some stuff. Is there a counselor you're aware of? Well, they had been through something as a family and they had a counselor. And I called her. Her name is Dale Williamson. I write about her in my book. And she says, you've reached the voicemail of Dale Williamson, licensed family counselor and registered play therapist.
All right.
And at that point, I was ready to talk to a licensed or registered whatever. And I left her a voicemail and she called me back. And she must have heard something in my voice, even though we had never met before. Yeah. And she said, I can meet you at this time. Mm-hmm. And I went to her office. And I'll never forget, she was sitting at her desk, and I sat in a chair opposite her desk, and there was a box of Kleenex right here. And I sat down, and she went, pushed the box of Kleenex. I wasn't even crying yet.
Yeah.
And she said, like, so tell me about your life. And I mean, for 5 minutes, if not 10 minutes straight, I just one after another, mm-hmm. after another. And as I was going through these things about how I thought my life was, and she's a woman of faith, but we didn't start there, mm-hmm. but very biblical in that I would say these things and she would say, now, is that true or is that a lie? So I'm saying these things about my life that were not true. It's how I felt, but it mm-hmm. wasn't true. But yeah, lying in the fetal position in my closet was a place I'd never been before. And then me realizing that my life was just like this big lie. I fell into the light beer commercial version of the American dream that, you know, if I drove a fancy car and an attractive woman was on my arm and I had a big house that like
sports
and I get to call baseball games for a living. I mean, who wouldn't trade places with me?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the life that God called me to be. And I lived my life with a lot of lies, and that's where it all started. Right. Mm-hmm. Right from that point, like we hit the ground running.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you brought up in the breakfast as well was that your journey through depression was not something that changed overnight. It's been a process.
Yeah.
So how did you see God continue to kind of walk you through that process to where you're at today? And, you know, is it something that you're continually having to kind of navigate with God of replacing truth with lies? Mm-hmm. Or like, what encouragement would you give to somebody who might be kind of walking through a similar season of depression?
So my life coach at the time, his name is Gary Kuzmic. And our first meeting, similar to my conversation with Dale, I was further down the road at this mm-hmm. point. So I wasn't as so like ready to just burst into tears at any moment. I was more composed. But I basically gave him the same recap of my life. Mm-hmm. And he goes, is Ryan enough? And he went on to expand the thought in that if I wasn't a broadcaster for the Royals, mm-hmm. if I didn't drive a nice car and live on a lake, would I still have friends? Mm-hmm. Would I still find purpose in my life? Would somebody want to marry me someday and start a family with me? Or did I need all of these things in order to have friends and find a wife and have kids? And I never thought about it that way. But I mean, when I began to look at my life, if all of this stuff had been taken away from me, who are the kind of people that I would want to hang out with?
Yep.
And I'll be honest, I mean, my father was a Major League Baseball player. My mom did real estate in Los Angeles, mostly in Beverly Hills, Bel Air, and Brentwood. Like those are
nice
real
houses.
Places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was meeting famous people all the time. And, but it made me realize, well, the point being I'd been around that my whole life. So it was very rare that I would be in awe of somebody because I just grew up around. I thought it was cool meeting famous mm-hmm. people, but I wasn't like, oh my God, you know, just. So I wasn't someone who was searching for relationships just, you know, so I can say I hung out with so-and-so. I mean, mm-hmm. I wasn't really like that. However, I did realize that a lot of what I was hoping to get as a result of all of these things, that there was going to be a certain reward for that was going to be satisfying. Well, if I could imagine, like, if all these things are gone
mm-hmm.
and nobody cared what I did for a living, what would my friends be like? Mm-hmm. What kind of conversations would I have? Mm-hmm. I began to realize that I couldn't watch certain movies. My late mother-in-law, wonderful, faithful woman, used to say there's a spirit attached to everything. And so my wife and I battled about this in the early years. I had this very macho, you know, big library of DVDs of movies that I probably watched once and would never watch again. But mm-hmm. it looked cool if you had 70 DVDs. Mm-hmm. I'm just making up a number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my wife's like going through these like, is this something you'd want we didn't have kids yet. Would this something you want our kids to watch? No. Well, then why is this in the house? I'm like, well, it's just a movie. Like it's what somebody, a visitor wants to watch it. Why would we want that in our house? mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, mm-hmm. My mom told me there's a spirit attached to everything. And so that was just like, wow, she's right. So, I mean, I didn't watch certain movies. I still to this day try to avoid listening to certain songs that remind me of a girl in high school. Mm. And you start thinking about a girl in high school. Now, I've never called that girl in high school, but what's productive about this?
Yeah.
How is this making me a better husband and a better follower of Jesus? Or a song that we used to listen to in college. We had a big beer party when, you know, everything goes and and, hey, remember the time when we did it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do. But how's that making me a better person? So yeah. The things that I listened to, the things that I watched, the things that I read, I just began to realize like these, there's a spirit attached to these things mm-hmm. that get me off of the path.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, I literally had to redesign my life.
Yeah.
I mean, and to your initial point, it wasn't overnight.
Yeah. Like
this is right. just, this has been a process of.
It was curation over a long period of time.
Continual growth. Yeah. People ask me all the time, when did you realize you were cured from your depression? Mm. And I say, I'm not cured from my depression. Yeah. I just know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I know what it isn't. I know when it's the enemy working on me. Mm-hmm. And if I start to feel these feelings, I know what it is. I know who to talk to. I manage it.
Yep.
And I have different places that I go to now. It's not alcohol.
Yep.
It's not an inappropriate relationship with a woman. I talk about it with my wife or my small group, or I pray about it, or I read my Bible. I mean, mm-hmm. I have places where I go now. But it is, I mean, it was a reconstruction of my behaviors. And there were people, I am the vine and you are the branches. There's never a point where Jesus says, hey, before you cut off the branch, explain to the branch, hey, it's not personal, but yeah. you know, you're kind of dragging down the vine here and we need the vine to thrive. And so, you know, I'm just going to have to cut you off. And then, you know what? Then I'm going to have to put you in a pile over there and set it on fire. But mm-hmm. I'm really sorry. I mean, you just cut off the branch that's yeah. hurting the vine. So there were relationships that I just had to end.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, some of them with no explanation. Like it was just done. Like yeah. this person is not, I remember a friend of mine once, we were laughing at somebody that we both loved and we were like, hey, he's funny. He goes, yeah, I love him. He's great. But you know what? He's not helping me get into heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I can have people, I got my 1, my 3, and my 12.
Mm-hmm.
There can be 100 on the other thing that I love them and I pour into them, but there's certain things that they do that I can't go do that with you anymore. Yeah. I can't be friends with you anymore. You can't be texting me these things mm-hmm. anymore. So yeah, redesigning cool. my life and my choices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking about like part of the book, you had mentioned intimacy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one section of the book talks about these different areas of intimacy that you truly need to grow in. And some of those things you just talked about can just deflect from growing deeper, you know, mm-hmm. in these areas of life onto that. So what were, I'm trying to think, spiritual?
Balancing your pies, I called it, yeah.
yeah.
Pies, which stands for P-I-E-S. I learned there's different types of intimacy. So if my wife walked in here and she wasn't my wife and I said, this is Sarah, she and I are in an intimate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like what's the, what our culture will tell you.
Sexual.
What we're, doing. Yeah. we're having sex.
Yep.
That's mm-hmm. it. So that's what I thought an intimate relationship mm-hmm. was. Now, if a guy walks in the room and I say, I'm having an intimate relationship with him. I mean, that would like raise mm-hmm. some eyebrows. But what was explained to me was, There's that's not the only intimacy you yep. can have. Now that and the pies, P-I-E-S, mm-hmm. that's physical intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
But when we met at dinner last night for the first time and we shook each other's hand and we looked into each other's eyes, there's an intimacy there as opposed to, you know, hey, nice meeting you,
yeah.
you know, like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Like there's yeah. there's different forms giving someone, there's a some people give great hugs,
yep.
you know. Some people give hugs and you hug them and you're just like,
neither that one person, of us wanted to do this.
Yeah. So now the ultimate physical intimacy is sex between a husband and a wife, and that's the way God designed it. And that's not my opinion. Mm-hmm. I didn't write this. I'm just trying to follow it as best as I can. Mm-hmm. But then there's intellectual intimacy. Like mm-hmm. we all have friends when we talk about, hey, I read this really cool story about how my son the other day gets in the car and goes, Dad, do you know that scripture about, you know, the rich young man, and Jesus says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven? I was like, yeah. He goes, do you know what he really meant there? No. He goes, I just learned in Bible class today that in the old synagogues, and I'm probably getting this wrong, but in the old synagogues, there was a big door that they'd only open like during the festivals or during mm-hmm. special times. But inside of the big door was a smaller door that the people went through, and that was known as the eye of the needle. That's what they called. And the only way a camel could get through the eye of the needle was the camel, you had to unload all the cargo off of the camel, and the camel had to bow down to get inside of it. It was very difficult.
Hmm.
So what he means is like a rich man to get into heaven, like he has to unload all of his stuff and he has to bow down to get into this difficult. And he was like so excited, intellectual intimacy that got his mind thinking. He was just so excited to tell me about that. E, emotional intimacy. And that's hard for men to say, this is how I really feel.
Yep.
You know, how you feel? I'm fine. Yeah. That's the perfect.
All right, I'm tired.
I'm tired. Whatever.
Busy.
Okay, yeah. But how do you really feel? You know, I feel stressed rejected out. Or I feel stressed out. Why? You know, okay, now there's some emotional, like what? And feelings are not truth. Feelings come and go. You know, if you looked at a train, you know, the engine of the train is the fact of who we are. And we hope that like who we are is driving the train. You know, the old coal car is the fuel, right? And then the caboose are your feelings. So you got to decide, like, what are you shoving the coal into? Are you shoving the coal into the fact of who you are? Or are you shoveling it into your feelings, into the caboose? Then you have to ask yourself, do you want the caboose leading the train here? Or do you want the train, the engine leading the train here? And so emotions are important, but then the feelings tied to it, I needed to learn that, like, it's really good for me to just, here's how I feel, but then it has to be summed up with, but that's just a feeling.
Yeah.
But I needed to give it a voice. I needed to, you know, I needed to be heard, and I needed someone to give me some feedback. And then the last one is spiritual intimacy. And I think the way it lined up, P-I-E-S, it makes a word, pies. But I also think, you know, each one is a little bit more difficult. When you first meet somebody, it's easy to shake their hand and just go through small talk. But then you get to know someone, like what motivates them, you know, what gets their brain going, their intellect. And then the next deeper thing is, you know, well, how do you feel about that, and get to know their feelings? And then, the one we all hope to get to is like, well, where's God's role in this? Like, what do you think God's calling you to do? So I told you my for years I operated very well and reconstructed my life and learned about intimacy and, but then I began to realize, like, if you don't have all four of them, then I went from the pie called balancing your pies. But then I came up with these four quadrants, and I was like, imagine this is your yard and you have a sprinkler that handles, you know, the P one handles the upper left, the I, the upper right, the E, the lower left, and the S, the lower right. If you had like a quadrant of a yard and your sprinkler, okay, what happens in a relationship if you turn off your emotional intimacy? Okay, that water's got to go somewhere. So now there's more flowing out of the physical. There's more flowing out of the intellectual, more flowing spiritual. Okay, now let's turn off the spiritual one. Now you got water like crazy going. And I was like, that's men in our culture today. We know physical intimacy and we know intellectual intimacy. And so why are men so addicted to pornography? Because that's the only valve they have turned on right now. There's no balance of speaking about their feelings, turning things over to God and not knowing, is he going to answer this prayer tomorrow? Is he going to answer it 10, 20 years from now? Who knows? Some people turn off three, and it's just, and then that's where you start to see, you know, a workaholic, like just can't stop working, or someone who has an addiction to something, like they're, in my life, I had certain valves turned off.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I started being willing to balance that intimacy that I began to realize, well, it's not that important for me to tell everyone what I think is really interesting, or it's not really that important for me to vomit my feelings all over someone because someone has to hear what my feelings are. It's not that important for me if I meet a woman and we're dating or we're getting to know each other that we need to get to a certain level physically. And it's not that, because there was some balance in there. I could be known in many different ways. So it was a good exercise for me, first of all, for God to share that with me. And then for me just to look at it, like if something's not working in my life, what is turned off and what's got too much water flowing out of it right now?
Yeah.
And then is, you know, like my life coach told me, is Ryan enough? That worked for me for a long time. And then I realized though, like that needed to become, is Jesus enough?
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
Is Ryan enough sounds good, but then it becomes about Ryan after a while.
Yeah. And you have such an awareness of mm-hmm. who you are. And I think in a large part, you've had to. You've had mm-hmm. to come to a great understanding of your motivations, your desires, your goals. And in that process, you have moved out of a lot of darkness and into walking in the light with God and with other people. And that's really kind of our direction for this year of men's ministry. As we look forward to the start of our study here in just a few days. And that's kind of where I want to close with this question of guys who are just unaware and guys who are still living in the dark. What would you encourage them about or encourage them to do to move from the darkness to the light?
I didn't share this at the breakfast, but I'm glad you brought that up because my pastor at our church in Kansas City said something that, and I was like, oh, I need to bring that up from, mm-hmm. from darkness to light. And his advice, and we were kind of speaking, he wasn't speaking specifically to men, but he speaks often about what's the next step. Like mm-hmm. if you want to take this, what's the next step? And I'll probably get this wrong. Actually, I may have it written down in my church notes. How about this, if you'll allow me
to go for it.
Indulge here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if someone is in darkness, where's the light? Is it a big bright light like you have in right here, or is there a little light in the corner?
Yeah.
And the thinking was, if you want to hear God speak, go where God is moving and stay there.
Hmm.
So as dark as it may seem, there's a light somewhere. It mm-hmm. might be a person. It might be leaving work an hour earlier than you normally would and just go for a walk and just breathe. But there's a place, if you're willing to go there, there's a place where you can separate. Is this place feeding my ego? Or is this place feeding my spirit?
Mm-hmm.
And wherever that is, go there and stay there. Now, as a follower of Jesus, go to church. Just go on Sunday. I don't know how good the church is going to be, but God can do amazing things, whether the pastor is really good or young or inexperienced or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But go where God is moving and stay there for a while
mm-hmm.
and allow yourself to get to know some people, hear their stories, share your story. And I also told the comparison, as I learned in the gym one day, the difference between pull-ups and pull-downs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working out. I was doing pull-ups in the off-season for some reason. I just thought that was like a really manly thing to do. And I remember how I could do it. For some reason, I think it was 12. I could do 12 pull-ups in a row, military style, you know. Mm-hmm. So I go to spring training, and I want to keep working out. And they have this beautiful weight room in spring training. And I wait till all the players leave, and then I'll go work out. And there's some coaches and staff in there. And there's a pull-up bar in there. And I was like, I should do some pull-ups. But I was so afraid of like, what is he doing? Pull-ups. Mm-hmm. I was, you know. So I did pull-downs on the machine. And for some reason, even though I was 175 pounds, pull-downs on the machine were easier than pull-ups. I'm sure somebody could come in here and explain why.
Yeah.
But the spiritual lesson was, it's much harder in life to pull yourself up to another level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a light. There's a place where God is moving, and there's, I'm sure, a person that you look at, and you have to ask yourself first, is this person that I admire feeding my, has a chance to feed my ego or feed my spirit?
Mm-hmm.
And are you willing to pull yourself up, whatever mm-hmm. it takes to pull yourself up to that level, as opposed to taking someone that maybe you admire, but you'd like to pull them down to your level.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pull them down to my level. Whatever your life circumstance is right now. And I shared this as well. This is a recent awakening for me. When you look at your life circumstance and that may be resulting in bad choices, do you justify it by saying, therefore, all of these things that happened to me that I didn't sign up for and it's not fair, therefore, I have the right to feel the way I feel, act mm-hmm. the way I feel, talk the way I feel,
mm-hmm.
okay? Or of all these things that have happened to me, nevertheless, mm-hmm. I'm going to pull myself up. Nevertheless, I'm going to go where God is moving. Nevertheless, I'm going to realize that God has a plan for me. And in the depths of my depression, guys, I never in a million years could have imagined that I'd be doing this podcast, that you'd be inviting me to speak to your men's group at church, that all these things, that never, nothing good was going to, the best thing that was going to come out of the depths of my depression was I was just going to survive, just make it through and fake it so no one knew it was going. But I heard God speak to me, will you allow me to do something with this? And I answered that call. I didn't feel better right away. In fact, it was a while till I felt better. So to tie it to, you know, put all those strands together, where's God moving? Go and stay there. Where's the light in your life? Are you willing to approach that light and pull yourself up to that light?
Yep.
And trust that you're not an accident. As a very irreverent friend of mine once said, of trying to appeal to my faith and said, what do you think? God was taking a nap when this happened, you know? I needed to hear that. Like, yeah, he wasn't taking, and he knew this was going to happen 10,000 years ago. And he also knows what the end is going to look like.
Yep.
And if you're willing to go there, and I shared today prayers that were answered 10 years later, 20 years later, I mean, answered in ways that I just couldn't even imagine they were going to be answered. But all he asked me to do is just get on the path. Yep. Tim Keller talks about, life is, I don't know how many, something like a 90-something references to the path in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And the path means you just put one foot in front of the other, just keep going forward. You don't know what's around to the left. You don't know what's around to the right, but you know what's behind you because you've been there. This dates my my story here, but there's a song by Whitesnake called Here I Go Again.
Oh, big fan.
And I think in that song is he says, I don't know where I'm going, but I sure know where I've been. That's a great line.
Mm-hmm.
And the path is one foot in front of the other.
Mm-hmm.
Our culture today, and if you go into a bookstore, there's self-help books everywhere. Mm-hmm. Our culture today says, no, there's a magic door. Mm-hmm. You just got to keep opening doors. And if you make a bad choice, who cares? Move on to the next door. The Bible's, this is a path. Yep. You get on the path and you just go, just keep going. There's not a magic door. Tim Keller talks about this is not a magic door. This is just get on the path and keep going.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Ryan, thank you so much for just taking the time to be with us this morning at the breakfast, but also just to sit down with us on the podcast. I know and have already heard from guys getting texts on my phone during our conversation how encouraged they were from our time this morning. So thank you. And we just pray that God would continue to bless you in your relationships with your wife and your kids and at the church that you're a part of, as well as in your work. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I received that prayer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And guys, we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Awake podcast. And before we go, I just want to make a reminder that it's not too late to jump into the Awake study. I know that by the time you're hearing this, we're going to be at the start of February, but we want you to be there. It's a time and an opportunity to step into the light with other guys, to be around brothers who are serious about growing in their faith. And so if you feel alone or if you feel like you are stuck in a dark place, come and join us. We want to walk with you. So we will see you next time.